Before we cue the saxophone, it should be noted that the information conveyed in this podcast should not be construed to be tax advice specifically to you, the listener, as every taxpayer has a unique situation. Thus, what may benefit someone else's tax situation may not help you, or worse, could be detrimental. Therefore, do not act on any strategies discussed or implied by this podcast without first consulting with a tax professional. Welcome once again to Taxes and Beer, where we drink taxes and explain beer. Strike that, reverse it. If you couldn't tell, we've already started drinking today's featured beverage. Justin is still hungover from our last episode, so I've enlisted Dark Horse's Max Fritz to join me this time. So, say hello, Max.
Hello, Max.
Wise guy, huh? Anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we've been drinking for the past couple of hours. I'm kidding, of course. It's only been about a half hour or so. Anyways, what we've been drinking is a triple Carmelite, which is brewed by the Bastille's Brewery in Belgium. This particular beer is one of those 750 milliliter bottles with a cork at the top, like a champagne bottle. The reason the bottle is corked is really twofold. The first is the CO2 pressure is much higher than most beers, and thus a cap could pop off if the bottle gets jostled around. The other reason is likely marketing, since it gives a bit of cachet, as older beers tend to retain their corks as corking predated capping. This particular beer was first brewed in 1996, but it's from a recipe that dates back to 1679. Carmelite is a nod to the Carmelite convent who originated the recipe. And what's interesting about this beer is that you would swear it has yeast in it, kind of due to this sweet flavor that it has, but it is actually made simply of wheat, oats, and barley. It's pretty delicious though, isn't it?
Very. You and your Belgian beers. So Chase, what are we talking about today?
So today's episode is actually pretty straightforward, but important nonetheless, and that is the tax changes faced by homeowners for 2018 and beyond.
Yes, a very timely subject matter for many of our clients. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about the 750K loan limit everybody's talking about?
So that actually refers to the principal amount of your mortgage that can generate interest that you're able to deduct. It's not to say that if your loan is greater than 750K that you wouldn't be able to deduct any of the interest. It simply means that the interest that you'd allocate to the loan amount that is above 750K would not be deductible. Thus, if you have a loan of, say, $1 million, which coincidentally is the old loan limit, roughly speaking, then 25% of your mortgage interest will not be deductible, but the other 75% of it will be. And so this will only impact mortgages that are closed after December 15th, 2017.
Okay. But what about the people who have mortgages that originated prior to December 15th?
So actually, they are grandfathered in, thankfully, and they are allowed to refi and remain grandfathered so long as that refinance loan is not for an amount greater than the loan prior to the refi. So thus, there are no cash out refis if you want to retain your grandfather status here.
Yeah, grandpas are pretty cool. So I'd imagine most people would prefer that.
I would agree, but what's not cool, however, is that interest on home equity loans is no longer deductible, regardless of when it originated. So grandpa can't save you on this one.
I don't think you know my grandpa.
No, but I have heard he was both a gentleman and a scholar, as are you, good sir.
Well said. Back on topic. What if you have a loan greater than 750K? Are you never going to be able to deduct the entire amount of the interest?
So you will be able to deduct all of the interest once the loan's principal balance gets to 750K or below due to you know, paying it down over time.
So you're not in the penalty box forever. Speaking of the penalty box, let's remind listeners of the salt caps.
So yeah, the state and local taxes, which include property taxes, are capped at $10,000 per year.
Is it just me or does it kind of seem like homeowners are getting screwed here?
Well, their tax advantages have definitely gotten diluted. Both mortgage interest and property taxes are the two main deductions that have been the longstanding tax benefits of home ownership. And they're now going to be diluted via what we just discussed. So the thing is, it really only impacts the coasts and a few other areas with elevated real estate prices and state income taxes. I'm not going to get into politics on this one, but it's pretty obvious that Trump does not mind that it adversely impacts mostly blue states.
So not much has been written about the deductibility of PMI. Have you heard anything on this?
So private mortgage insurance, or PMI, actually got extended for tax year 2017, but it remains to be seen as to whether taxpayers are going to be able to deduct this in 2018 and going forward, since it was not specifically called out in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And it's one of the many extenders out there that, like the name implies, has to get extended on a yearly basis. Currently, you know, that deduction only exists in full for taxpayers with gross income of under $100,000.
Ah, gotcha. Seems like another item that may further reduce the tax benefits of homeownership.
Potentially. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what this does to higher cost housing markets, you know, as these tax changes have effectively reduced the ROI of homeownership, since tax savings are really a part of your overall return on investment. So fortunately, people buy for more reasons than just tax savings, but it could still be a sticking point that keeps people on the fence, you know, during their purchase decision, which ultimately could lead to a softening in the housing market for those higher cost areas.
Anything else we should be aware of?
Well, all of the above could actually be totally irrelevant for you if you're no longer itemizing. So as we discussed on episode one, the standard deduction has been doubled. So there are going to be homeowners that will not itemize, as hard as that may be to believe. People in this situation might benefit from a strategy of batching certain itemized deductions into specific tax years. Another thing that's important to note here is that these tax changes absolutely do not impact rental properties. Nothing has changed in regard to mortgage interest or property taxes on those properties. They are deductible in full. And further, 1031 like-kind exchanges, the part of the tax code that allows you to defer taxable gain on the sale of property if you quickly buy another replacement property, was kept intact only for real estate. All other property types no longer have the ability to be exchanged in a 1031 transaction. Also, nothing changed in regard to Section 125 capital gain exclusion, which allows up to $500,000 in capital gains to be tax-free on the sale of a primary residence. Earlier versions of this bill actually had some restrictive language on the amount of time that you needed to live in the house, but that was scrapped since.
Well said, Chase. Well, I think that pretty much covers everything that is relevant from a tax perspective for homeowners. Let me top off that beer of yours while you do the outro.
We want to thank you for joining us and encourage you to subscribe to this podcast to stay current on tax issues that affect your bottom line. Please note that every individual situation is completely unique and that you need to consult with a tax professional prior to making any tax moves, either advocated or implied by this podcast. To that end, if you have any questions about any of the topics discussed on this podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at info@darkhorsecpa.com. For content beyond the podcast, including how to become a client, please visit our website at darkhorsecpa.com and follow us on Instagram using the handle darkhorsecpa.